read Isaiah 53:11 together. After he has suffered, he will see the light of life and be satisfied. By his knowledge, my righteous servant will justify many. He will bear their iniquities.
Stretched beyond the city walls. My intention was to reach the garden before daylight, which would make it possible for me to hide my mourning in the ambiguity of the night's inky cloak. I reached the garden just as the sun's rim crested the edge of the earth, which allowed enough tungsten light to creep over the ground, illuminating the pathway beyond around the flower beds and the potted plants. Near the mausoleum, I looked down into my bag to find the spices I had packed. I knew that I would not be able to anoint his body directly, but I had hoped to break open the vials and spread the perfumes over the stone boulder that blocked the entrance to the tomb. I nearly dropped the bottles when I looked up. The boulder was gone. I looked around again to make sure I hadn't walked in the wrong direction, that I wasn't on the wrong side of the garden. In my mind, I had retraced the steps from yesterday's visit and was convinced that I was in the right place. I stood motionless for a long time as the sun grew brighter, allowing me the ability to see the surroundings more clearly. The first thing that stood out was that two jagged rocks were near the outside of the cave's entrance. I ran my hand along the rough edges and realized that these were two halves of a much larger stone. Behind me, I heard the sound of movement, and I turned quickly to see the gardener placing his tools down and settling to work on his knees. I watched him as he drew a spade from his pack and began to uproot the dirt around the small cluster of wildflowers. His palms were wrapped tightly with cotton cloths, which I assumed he had done to protect his hands from blisters. His face looked weathered, but had a glow of serenity about it, which gave the impression of a man contented in his work. "Excuse me, sir." I approached slowly, not wishing to startle him. "Were you here long enough to see what happened?" "Good morning," he said without looking up. "What's happened?" I looked back to make sure that I had not imagined the giant boulder now cast asunder. It was still there and impossible to miss. "Well, yesterday when I was here, this boulder was rolled in front of the entrance to this cave, and as you can see, it's moved." I saw the warmth of a smile soften his bearded face as he considered my obvious understatement. "I suppose it did move a bit," he said with an air of paternal teasing. "Who was buried in there? Haven't you heard about Jesus of Nazareth?" "It doesn't sound familiar. Was he some sort of politician?" I only hear about very rich people being buried in this garden." "No," I answered, "he was a prophet, or at the very least, a teacher. He was crucified on Friday. The whole city was in an uproar over it. You really didn't hear anything about it?" "There have been a lot of people being crucified since the Romans moved in. I guess I've stopped paying attention." I continued to watch him as he looked down the garden. His calm countenance seemed otherworldly. "Was he a friend of yours?" I paused and I thought about the answer. "He was a great teacher, a great leader, and an exceedingly compassionate man," I said with all the forced sincerity of one reciting a eulogy. "But not a friend?" he asked, looking back at me. "I suppose that people like him don't really have friends. They're too wise. They're too high above everyone else." "That's too bad. It doesn't mean a whole lot to be a great man if it means being cut off from sharing your life with other good people. It doesn't seem like his ideas could be worth much if he couldn't even love and be loved." "I suppose that it doesn't even matter anymore. He's dead now. So his great ideas aren't worth anything at all." At this, the gardener simply shrugged and turned his face back to his work. I watched as he sunk the small spade into the dirt around a clump of weeds near the edge of the flower bed. He didn't seem to notice as I moved in closer. For some reason, I found that the panic I had been feeling was evaporating from that tight space between my heart and my stomach, and that my interest was now focused on this gentleman and his work. He removed a few weeds and patted the dirt back down before moving a larger cluster that was spreading over the farther border and invading like an army. He stood up and looked around. "Could you hand me that shovel?" he asked me. His words rustled me loose from my reverie. "Of course," I answered as I walked over to where the small shovel was resting against the wall of the cave. He placed the shovel near the base of the larger cluster of weeds and used his foot to press the edge deep into the ground. With a forceful heave, he levered the bushel out of the dirt and pulled the plant from the roots. Once he threw the clump of mud and leaves into his cart, he looked back and paused. I shifted my gaze from him to the object of his attention and noticed a beautiful white lily which had sprouted up amongst the wild torrent of thorns he had just removed. "Amazing," he remarked as a grin began to spread the edges of his mouth into a fully developed smile. "Do you see this patch of pathetic-looking half-flowers over there?" he asked me, pointing to the other end of the garden. "I've been trying everything to bring these lilies back to life, but they just keep dying off." He threw down the shovel and sat down on the grass, beckoning me to do the same. We sat for another moment, just looking at this singular flower, which seemed to be shining a shade of white, made all more pristine by the dull colors that surrounded it. "I didn't even plant this one here, and yet it's thriving among the thorns. In fact, I would venture to say that There is not another flower in this garden that can boast such a robust composure. In all the years that I've spent nurturing flowers, I've never seen something this breathtaking. At first, it didn't seem that impressive to me, but as I continued to stare at the small plant, I began to notice the subtleties of its beauty. The long petals stretched outward toward the sun with a sort of proud energy, like a child basking in the approval of his parents. Six brilliantly yellow buds stood out on their green stems like a glittering crown surrounded by 100 black specks, which swirled and danced around the petals like stars shimmering in the night sky. It makes me wonder, the gardener mused, all this work I put into these flowers, my forceful interventions, my endless techniques, my hopeless attempts to trick nature into thriving, and all I've gotten for my labor is a dull patch of dull flowers. Sure, they're alive, but just barely, and for all my good intentions, they're never going to sparkle like this lily, stretching up towards the sun, all of these months, quietly developing into their rightful heir to this garden. I wanted to speak, but no words seemed appropriate in the presence of such serene beauty. I opened my mouth with the hope that words would follow. But as I did, we heard the sound of a man running. I looked up to see Peter charging towards the opening of the cave. He paused to look at the rocks and then ran into the darkness. A few seconds, he emerged again, scanned the garden, and saw us sitting near the flower bed. "He's gone," Peter announced with shocked bewilderment. "What's happened?" Again, I opened my mouth, but no words came. Peter was becoming impatient at my silence. "I've got to tell the others," he said as he ran again from the garden. "I should go with him," I said to the gardener. "He's my friend." The gardener looked up at me, and our eyes met for the first time. "I've enjoyed our conversation," he said, smiling. There was something familiar about the way his eyelids squinted as his mouth drew up in a smile. I felt as though I were encountering someone I had only met in some misty dream from long ago. As I continued to look into his eyes, it seemed to me that he became less like a man and more like the embodiment of some grand idea. He was not simply a conveyor of grace, but that he was grace incarnate. He had not simply given me hope, but he was hope animated and moving through the world. I did not feel that he was showing me love as much as he was love, that ambiguous thing that we all search for, thing that we long for, plead for, and yet never seem to fully experience. His eyes were at once the eyes of a child filled with unconditional love and dependence, the eyes of a parent filled with unending sympathy and care, and the eyes of a lover saturated with longing and intimacy. I continued to sit. I knew that I would not catch up with Peter, but I knew that the men would be back in that room deliberating and arguing for many hours, and it would not matter what time I returned. In those moments, there was nowhere else I wanted to be other than in the soft glow of gentle love which danced off the face, the shoulders, and the eyes of this weathered yet beautiful soul. Thank you.
the end.
Woo!